Okay, so you're interested in pollinators,
Right.
and this intriguing method called Noschia pollinator walks.
Yes.
It sounds so simple, right?
It really does.
Just taking a stroll and observing insects.
Yeah.
But as we dive into this study from the journal Insects,
Okay.
you'll see how these walks
Yeah.
can reveal some pretty amazing things
There, sure.
about biodiversity and the health of our ecosystems.
Well, it all starts with this plant
Correct.
called Noschia arvensis,
Noschia arvensis.
also known as field scabious.
Okay.
It's a real charmer
Oh.
with lilac to pale blue flower heads,
Beautiful.
and it grows wild across Europe and Asia.
So why is this plant so important for the study?
Well, Noschia arvensis is like a magnet for pollinators, bees, butterflies,
Okay.
flies, you name it.
Okay.
They're all drawn to it. This makes it a fantastic focal point
Yep.
for monitoring pollinator populations
Okay.
because you can get a snapshot of a whole range of species. Yeah.
Just by observing this one plant.
So I guess that's where the walk part comes in.
Right.
What exactly does a Noschia pollinator walk involve?
The method is surprisingly straightforward.
Okay.
The researchers identified sites
Right.
with at least 500 Noschia arvensis flowers in bloom,
Wow.
enough to get a good sample size.
Yeah.
Then they walked through the area three times
Okay.
during the flowering season,
All right.
early, mid, and late season, carefully recording
Where?
every insect visitor.
It sounds almost too easy.
It is pretty simple.
But what kind of insights can you actually get
Right.
from simply observing which insects are visiting a particular flower?
Well, the study applied this method
Okay.
across 85 sites in Sweden and Russia. What's fascinating is
Yeah.
that they found some significant differences
Okay.
in the types of pollinators
Yeah.
present in each region.
Okay, I'm intrigued.
Yeah.
What kind of differences?
For example, the Swedish sites.
We're mostly in landscapes with a high land use intensity.
High land use intensity.
That means these areas have been significantly modified by humans
Okay.
for things like agriculture and forestry.
I see. So not a lot of untouched wilderness.
Exactly. And in these landscapes, they found a higher frequency of bumblebees, beetles, and certain types of flies
Okay.
visiting the Noschia arvensis.
What about the Russian sites?
The Russian sites were quite different. They tended to have lower land use intensity,
Okay.
meaning the landscapes were closer to their natural state. And in these areas, they found more solitary bees,
Okay.
butterflies, and moths.
So it seems like the type of landscape really influences which pollinators are present.
Precisely. And
Yeah.
this makes sense when you consider how habitat loss and fragmentation
Right.
can affect different pollinator species.
Yeah.
Some are more adaptable to human-modified landscapes, while others require more pristine habitats to thrive.
That's a great point. It's
Yeah.
like some pollinators are city dwellers while others prefer the countryside.
A perfect analogy.
Yeah.
And one of the most striking examples of this came from the observation
Yeah.
of a particular solitary bee
Okay.
called Decipoda cirripus.
Decipoda cirripus.
In the Russian sites,
Interesting.
it's actually considered likely extinct
Really?
in the Nordic region,
Wow.
likely due to the intense land use practices.
Wow, that's a significant finding.
It is.
So just by observing which insects are visiting Noschia arvensis,
Right.
the researchers were able to get clues about the overall health
Yeah.
and biodiversity of
Absolutely.
these different landscapes.
Exactly.
Well done.
And the study goes even deeper to
Okay, yeah.
looking at how specific elements within a landscape,
Okay.
like the amount of forest,
Right?
shrubland, or
Yeah.
open land,
Okay.
can impact pollinator
So
populations.
it's not just about the presence of the Noschia arvensis.
Right.
It's about the entire ecosystem
Yes.
surrounding those plants.
You got it. And one interesting finding was that shrub cover
Shrub cover?
actually seemed to decrease
Well.
both the number of pollinator species and their overall density.
That's surprising.
It is.
I would thought shrubs would offer more shelter and food sources for insects.
It is counterintuitive.
Yeah.
The research suggests that in these particular landscapes,
Yeah.
shrub cover might be outcompeting
Okay.
other plant species that are more valuable to pollinators.
Interesting.
Or perhaps the dense shrubbery makes it
Yeah.
harder for pollinators to access the flowers they need.
It just goes to show how complex these ecological relationships can be.
They really are.
it's not always as straightforward as we might think.
Right.
Yeah.
And this is one of the reasons why long-term monitoring programs like the Nasha pollinator walks are so valuable.
Okay.
They can help us track changes in pollinator populations over time.
Right.
And understand how different factors like land use or climate change are impacting these vital creatures.
Speaking of different factors.
Okay.
The study also mentions a specialist bee called Andrena hatterfiana.
Andrena hatterfiana.
What's special about this bee?
Andrena hatterfiana is fascinating
because
it relies heavily on Nasha arvensis for pollen.
Okay.
It's a key food source for them.
Right.
And while they were found in both Sweden and Russia, they were much more common in those less disturbed Russian landscapes.
So even though Nasha arvensis is widespread, the bees that rely on it might be struggling in areas where human activity has significantly altered the landscape.
That's a key takeaway.
Right.
It highlights how we need to consider not just the abundance of a particular plant, but also the well-being of the specialized pollinators that depend on it.
It makes you realize that even seemingly small changes in a landscape can have ripple effects throughout the ecosystem.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And this is why understanding the complex relationships between plants, pollinators, and their environment is crucial for effective conservation effort.
Right.
Yeah.
It's amazing how much we can learn about an entire ecosystem just by observing the pollinators that visit a single plant species.
It really highlights the interconnectedness of nature.
Yeah.
And speaking of connections, this research also emphasizes the crucial role of standardized monitoring programs.
Okay.
That's where methods like the Nasha pollinator walks, it becomes much easier to compare results across different regions and over time.
Okay.
It's like speaking the same language.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
You need that common ground to see the bigger picture.
Right.
And identify any concerning trends.
Precisely. Yeah. And this is where citizen science can really shine.
Right.
The Nasha pollinator walk method is so straightforward that anyone can learn it.
Yeah.
Imagine a network of people all over the world contributing to a global pollinator monitoring program.
It's like a global neighborhood watch.
Yes.
But for pollinators.
I love that analogy.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't just be about collecting data.
Right.
Citizen science can also be a powerful tool for raising awareness and empowering people to take action in their own communities.
It gives people a sense of ownership and agency.
Exactly.
They're not just passive observers.
Right. Yeah.
They're active participants in protecting these vital creatures.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And technology can play a huge role here as well.
Oh, how so?
Imagine an app.
Okay.
Maybe with image recognition software that could help citizen scientists identify the pollinators they encounter.
Yeah.
Even if they aren't expert entomologists, they could still contribute valuable data.
That's such a cool idea.
Yeah.
It would make the process so much easier and more accessible.
And then all that data could be uploaded to a central database, creating a real-time map of pollinator activity across the globe.
Wow.
Scientists could use that data to track population trends, identify areas of concern, and develop targeted conservation strategies.
Right.
It's about connecting the dots on a global scale.
It's almost like creating a pollinator GPS.
Yeah.
Helping us navigate the challenges these creatures are facing.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
But let's shift gears for a moment and talk about the broader implications of this research.
Okay.
What does it all mean for conservation efforts?
That's a crucial question.
It is.
We've talked about the how of monitoring pollinators.
Right.
But now let's explore the so what.
Okay.
What actions can we take based on these findings?
Well, for starters, the study reinforces the idea that we need to think about conservation on a landscape level.
Okay.
It's not enough to just protect isolated patches of habitat.
Right.
We need to consider the surrounding areas.
Yeah.
And how land use practices in those areas are affecting pollinator populations.
So it's about creating pollinator-friendly landscapes.
Yes.
Yay. Not just pollinator-friendly gardens.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And this research also highlights the value of those less well-derbed landscapes.
Okay.
Those Russian sites with their lower land use intensity were supporting a greater diversity of pollinators.
Right.
Including some species that are rare or declining elsewhere.
It makes you wonder what we've already lost.
It does.
In those places where human activity has dramatically altered the landscape.
It's a sobering thought.
Yeah.
But it also underscores the potential for restoring degraded habitats. If we can create more of those diverse pollinator-friendly landscapes, we might be able to help reverse some of the declines we're seeing.
That's a hopeful message.
It is.
It's not just about lamenting what's been lost,
right,
but also about actively working to create a better future for these pollinators.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And this research gives us the tools and knowledge to do just that.
Oh.
The NASHA pollinator walk method, combined with the power of citizen science and technology, can be a game changer for pollinator conservation.
It's a reminder that even small actions can have a big impact.
Absolutely.
When we work together towards a common goal.
And speaking of taking action, the study also emphasized the importance of integrating this method into national monitoring programs. This isn't just a cool idea for citizen scientists.
Okay.
It has real potential to influence policy.
Wow.
And guide large-scale conservation efforts.
It's exciting to think that something as simple as observing pollinators on a walk,
I know, it's pretty cool,
could contribute to such meaningful change.
It shows that science doesn't have to be confined to labs and research institutions.
Yeah.
Everyone can be a part of the discovery process.
So to recap, we've covered the NASHA pollinator walk method.
Right.
Its ability to reveal insights into pollinator populations and landscapes.
Mm-hmm.
And the crucial role of citizen science in amplifying these efforts.
Exactly.
We've also explored the broader implications of this research.
Yeah.
Highlighting the importance of landscape-level conservation.
Right.
And the potential for restoring degraded habitats.
Absolutely.
But before we move on to discussing how you can adapt this method for your own local area.
Okay.
I think it's important to pause. Emphasize the key takeaway here.
I agree.
What do we want our listeners to remember most from this deep dive?
I think it's the power of observation.
Yeah.
This study shows that you don't need to be a scientist with a fancy degree to contribute to our understanding of the natural world.
Anyone can be a citizen scientist.
Exactly.
With a little curiosity and the right tools, you can make a real difference in protecting these vital pollinators.
Absolutely.
It's about paying attention to the often overlooked details.
Right.
The buzzing of bees.
Yeah.
The flighting of butterflies.
Mm-hmm.
And realizing that these seemingly small creatures play a huge role in the health of our planet.
And it's about recognizing that we are all connected.
Yeah.
The choices we make, even in our own backyards, can have ripple effects throughout the ecosystem.
So as we move into the final part of our deep dive, we want to leave you with a challenge.
All right, what's that?
How can you apply the principles of the NASHA pollinator walk to your own local area?
That's a good question.
What plants might serve as good indicators of pollinator diversity where you live?
Yeah, it's something to ponder as you head out on your next nature walk.
Maybe you'll even be inspired to start your own pollinator observations.
Right.
But we'll delve into those practical steps in just a moment.
Okay, sounds good.
Stay with us. Welcome back.
All right.
We've been exploring this fascinating citizen science project, NASHA Pollinator Walks, and how it's helping researchers track pollinator populations.
Absolutely.
And as we wrap up this deep dive, you've challenged our listeners to adapt this method to their own regions.
That's right. That's right.
We want to empower everyone to become citizen scientists.
Yeah.
So let's say someone is feeling inspired and wants to start their own pollinator monitoring project.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
The first step is to choose your focal plant.
Oh,
does it have to be NASHA arvensis?
Not at all.
Okay.
Remember, NASHA arvensis was chosen for this particular study.
Right.
Because it's widespread in Europe and Asia.
Yeah.
But the beauty of this method is its adaptability.
So what are some things to consider when choosing a plant for your own pollinator walks?
Well, you want a plant that is common in your area.
Right.
Easy to identify.
Okay.
And has a relatively long blooming period, so you can observe it over a decent stretch of time.
Exactly. And it needs to be attractive to a diverse range of pollinators.
Right.
Think bees.
Mm-hmm.
Butterflies.
Okay.
Moths.
Mm-hmm.
Flies.
Okay.
You want a good mix of visitors to get a comprehensive picture of your local pollinator community.
It's like setting up a buffet for your pollinator friends.
That's a great way to think about it.
Yeah, and seeing who shows up.
Exactly.
And once you've chosen your plant, the next step is finding suitable observation sites.
Right.
What makes a good site for pollinator monitoring?
You want an area with a healthy population of your chosen plant, similar to the study we discussed.
Yeah.
It's helpful if those plants are relatively concentrated.
Right.
So you're not walking miles just to find a few flowers.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
You want to maximize your observation time.
Right.
Yeah.
And just like any good field trip,
right,
Accessibility and safety are important considerations. Make sure it's a place where you can easily and safely observe pollinators without disturbing the environment too much.
Okay, so you've got your plant, your site,
mm-hmm.
and now it's time to start observing and recording data.
Right.
What are some tips for making those observations?
Well, patience is key.
Okay.
Pollinator watching is a lot like bird watching.
Right.
You're not going to see everything all at once.
Mm.
Sometimes you have to sit and wait, observe the flowers, and let those pollinators come to you.
And don't forget your trusty notebook or phone to record your observations.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You want to note the date, time, weather conditions.
Right.
And of course, the types of pollinators you see visiting the flowers.
Okay.
Taking photos or videos can be helpful for identification later.
That's a good idea.
Especially if you're not familiar with all the different species.
Don't worry if you're not an expert entomologist.
No, not at all.
Even just noting the general types of pollinators.
Right.
Like bees, butterflies, or flies.
Yeah.
Can provide valuable data.
You got it.
Yeah.
And if you're unsure about an identification,
right.
There are tons of online resources and field guides available.
Yeah.
You can even connect with local naturalist groups or experts in your area for help.
There's a whole community of passionate pollinator enthusiasts out there.
Right.
Who are happy to share their knowledge.
Exactly. Yeah. And the more people who participate in these kinds of citizen science projects, the more we'll understand about these fascinating creatures and how to protect them.
So if you've been listening to this episode and thinking, I'd love to do something like that.
Yeah. Well, you absolutely can.
It's about taking that initial spark of curiosity.
Right.
And turning it into action.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Maybe you'll even discover something new about your local ecosystem.
And that brings us to the end of our deep dive into Nosha pollinator walks.
It does.
We hope you've enjoyed exploring this simple yet powerful method.
For monitoring pollinator populations and understanding the vital role they play in our world.
Absolutely.
Remember, anyone can be a citizen scientist.
That's right.
So get out there.
Yeah.
Explore your local area.
Mm-hmm.
And start your own pollinator adventure.
Happy observing.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
Of course.
We'll catch you next time.